This is Karen Lyle with Latitude 38's Max Ebb on Sailsport Talk. Let's eavesdrop on a conversation between Max Ebb and Lee Helm on Sailing Science.
I ran aground a few weeks ago, taking my usual shortcut into the marina. Right in view of the yacht club, too. I was mortified.
Max, there's like a little book you can get at the marina office?
Yes, I know how to read the tide book. But this tide was exceptionally low during a full moon. What I don't understand is why, with the sun and moon pulling from opposite sides of the Earth, we get extra strong tides. Shouldn't the gravity from the sun partially cancel out the gravity from the moon? Yet we get spring tides on the new moon and on the full moon.
That's because it's the gravity gradient, not the gravitation per se.
And also, why do we get two highs and two lows every day? If it's the moon's gravity pulling on the water, you'd think there'd be just one high tide each day, always on the side of the Earth closest to the moon.
Well, it's the same answer. It's the gravity gradient. The change in gravity from one side of the Earth to the other. In a uniform gravity field, there'd be no tides. Earth and water would, like, both feel exactly the same pull.
You'll have to explain this gradient thing.
Okay, for sure. So first, remember that gravitational force drops off with the inverse square of distance. For example, if you have a gravitational attraction from a large object like the moon, and then you double your distance away from the moon, you'll only have one quarter of the gravitational force. Easy high school level proof based on a symmetrical Gaussian surface integral. Look it up. But we don't need to get into that right now.
Okay, inverse square is easy enough. I remember that.
Well, now let's work this out with some numbers. So we all know the moon is about 250,000 miles away. The Earth has a radius of about 4,000 miles. The moon is pulling, wait for it, 3.3% harder on the ocean on the side of the Earth near the moon than it's pulling on the center of the Earth.
Right. So there's a high tide under the moon. Makes perfect sense. Doesn't answer my question.
Okay, so now look at the side of the Earth away from the moon. The moon is pulling by 3.3% less on the far side water than on the Earth itself. We're left with water on the near side being pulled towards the moon, away from the Earth, and on the far side, it's like the Earth being pulled away from the water.
So it's like the Earth and the water around it are being stretched out with high water on each side?
Exactly.
But still, shouldn't the moon and sun cancel each other out, at least partly, when they're on opposite sides of the Earth?
Well, that's the cool part. So, okay, the gravity forces are opposite, but the gravity gradient end up being in the same direction.
So it's like two negatives making a positive. Both bodies, even though they're on opposite sides of the Earth, tend to stretch out the Earth and the water on it along the same line.
Good. So, trick question. In English, do two positives make a negative?
No, they don't. Especially not in English. It's just like in math. A double positive is still a positive.
Yeah, right.
All right. Thank you for that, Crisscross. Welcome back to the show. It is 9:40 a.m. out here on the West Coast on a Tuesday. That means we check in with SailsportTalk.com's Karen Lyle. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing just fantastic today. Thank you.
Very good. And we are now also joined by Monica Grant Cook from the C Word. And I guess, Monica, we can say that you are another Captain Cook. Is that right?
Good morning, Rick. Good morning, Karen. You could say that, except I'm nowhere near being a boat captain. I failed, but you know that part still eludes me.
Right. So Monica, you had the privilege of sailing with your husband, Captain Jay Grant, who we interviewed last week, on Seaward, going down the coast. I guess you left in December and travel down to the Sea of Cortez and back, and you were the cook as well for all of that voyage. How was that, cooking down below in the galley when you're in the seas?
Well, it was a range of things, actually. As far as cooking on a boat goes, it was luxury, because my previous professional boat cooking experience, I actually had to work in what I equate to a hobbit hole. Very small, no space. I had to sit down to do most of my work. Even on our own boat, it's a small galley, as most boat owners would know. But on Seawoods, it was quite well appointed. You could probably fit four people in the galley. You couldn't all be doing things. But we had a brand new stove Jay had been working hard with the crew in the months leading up to the voyage, and they'd refitted the galley with a new stove, and everything had been painted. It was nice and fresh, and huge refrigeration area, big freezer, lots of workspace. So as far as cooking on a boat goes, I found it quite good. Of course, there will be other boats that are much better appointed, but this was great.
I remember reading a book about a couple that were on a boat and they were stranded on an island, but they were still able to bake cakes on the boat, and I was sort of surprised by that. What is maybe, I don't know if that's elaborate to you, but what is maybe one of the more elaborate meals that you're able to conjure up on such a thing?
You could pretty much do everything. I mean, I made birthday cakes on board. So we had one of our guests had a birthday, and I made a double-layer birthday cake. Same for our crew. One of our crew had a birthday on board, and we made her that cake as well. We did soups. We did baked chickens. We did stir fries. Lots of salads. I mean, particularly being in Mexico, we had an abundance of papaya and pineapples and mangoes. Lots of lovely fresh fruit and veggies down there. We even on one of our, actually on the trip going from Newport down into Baja, we caught some fish and we turned that into ceviche and sashimi and baked fish. You can do anything. It's just a matter of being organized.
Now, what kind of, I assume it's a gimbaled stove that you have. Is it propane or compressed natural gas or alcohol?
It is propane. We have three tanks up on deck, and the lines run down into the galley, and there is a, don't know exactly what you call it, but it's a safety mechanism whereby you have to switch on the gas at the wall, and then you can light the stove. It's auto-ignite with the piezo ignition both in the oven and on the stovetop, and then you turn the gas off at the wall again. It just helps remove the gas or keep the gas out of the lines and reduce the possibility of fires.
What would be maybe if you could share with us, I mean, it sounds all very leisurely, but we know that a squall can appear out of nowhere. Is there a moment of peril that you can look back on now and maybe not laugh, but share with us?
I wouldn't say peril as such. Really, in the Sea of Cortez, the worst was when we were crossing from Puerto Vallarta over to La Paz, and we had 3 days of rough weather. And then on our passage back from Cabo to Sausalito, we hit a couple of patches of rough seas and high winds. But I guess the most perilous thing that would happen in a galley situation is that you have a full pot of something hot on the stove and it's in danger of tipping. Even with the gimbling, unfortunately, it's not ideal or it's not foolproof because you have a heavy pot on one side of the stove. It tends to want to swing to the heaviest side, so you have to counterbalance it with something on the front. So it's challenging at best, and even just carrying a hot pot of soup upstairs to serve dinner on deck, one day I misbalanced and was in danger of throwing the soup all through the cockpit, but somehow managed to put the soup down and then fall over.
Ah, but you didn't get injured, I take it.
Say again?
You didn't get injured.
No, just a bruise of ego.
No, I remember coming back up on the Baja Bash, just a short, when the seas were significant and there was pitching and so forth. Have you ever been cooking when you had to deal with the pitching? I know when I was on my cot, I would actually levitate off the cot, maybe two or three feet sometimes. Did that ever happen with pots where they just come up off the stove?
But that has not happened to me, fortunately. I have had things slide across the galley, across the countertop, so I try to use non-slip mats whenever possible, but occasionally I forget or I haven't quite got to it yet. Nothing actually spilled in the galley, although we did have a bottle of olive oil somehow fly its way across the salon through pitching and rolling. But no, that's the worst we've experienced, fortunately.
A couple more questions from Monica Grant Cook. I'm always intrigued by the fact that it's lawless out there, especially in the Sea of Cortez. There's no U.S. Coast Guard that's going to help you. And it's not like there's Somali pirates everywhere, but as once again, no one's going to come help you. So are you guys armed to the teeth? Do you have pistols and shotguns, or do you sort of feel like if you carry trouble, you're looking for trouble?
Personally, I've never carried anything like that. Never been in a situation where I felt it necessary. And I don't know, there's two schools of thoughts on it. It's good to be protected if you need it, but at the same time, it could also be if you carry trouble, you're looking for trouble. At best, we would have kitchen knives and our own ingenuity, I guess.
Monica, when you were down, you were down in the Sea of Cortez when you found out about the coronavirus. Did you have to go shopping or have stores brought to you for your trip down there? How did that work? I mean, how did obtaining food work when you were dealing with the coronavirus down in Mexico before you came back on this voyage?
It really wasn't that apparent to us, Karen. We heard the news, probably most significantly in the last 3 to 4 weeks before we came back. That's when we realized how serious everything was. We were quite sheltered. In Mexico, we didn't notice anything until we actually got to, I think it was in Cabo. San Jose del Cabo was our last port before returning to Sausalito. And we did do some provisioning there, and the supermarket had everybody who was working there was wearing masks and gloves, and they were wiping down all the shopping carts, and they had sanitizers at the doors. As far as stocks go, there was plenty of everything. There's nothing apparent other than the masks and gloves, et cetera. So
Sorry, I thought you were done. Been asking our guests this ever since the pandemic, and that is, let's say you got word when you were at sea, don't come to the mainland, everyone's infected, we're all zombies, don't go to any civilized place. What would be the island that in the Pacific that you would head to, your sort of private Pitcairn's island? Do you have a plan like that?
Well, if I told you my private plan, then everyone would know and they'd all want to go there. We had actually on the trip before we left Mexico and during our passage joked about going everywhere, starting at Hawaii, going over to the South Pacific Islands, even as far as Australia, because I have a home there and everyone would be welcome. Whether our stores would last that long or not, I don't know.
You are also a sailor, Monica. And you've been sailing all around the world with Jay on different occasions. What is your favorite role as crew on the boat?
Favorite role is probably one that hasn't happened for me yet. That is to not have to do anything that I don't want to do and to be able to just enjoy the scenery, pitch in. In every situation, and sit back and just write about it and take photos. That would be my ideal role. But in the meantime, being a cook is pretty good.
And finally, Monica, I remember my relatives in Germany used to make fun of me that I like cars with an automatic transmission. They say it's not really driving, and I'm like, well, I had a car with a stick for years, and I'm just tired of it. So. For you, if you had a luxury yacht, you could do that. You could put your feet up and just let everything mostly take care of itself. But in your mind, is that truly sailing? Or, how do you feel about that?
No, I think sailing is definitely hands-on. If you're not hands-on, then you're not really sailing. And then you have nothing to talk about, nothing to write about. So on Seaward, we had to man the helm 24 hours a day. It doesn't have auto helm. It doesn't have any covering in the cockpit, so we were out there in the rain, wind, sunshine, whatever the weather gods threw at us. And although we constantly thought about hot drinks and hot tubs at home, if we'd sat in the cockpit and been able to automatically drive everything, the experience wouldn't have been anywhere near as exciting.
Monica Grant Cook from the Sea Word, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure having you, Monica. Good to see you again.
Thanks, Karen. All right.
And Karen, we got a couple minutes here. How much do you buy into the old adages? I mean, so much of what we say in America are terms from British sailors and just catchphrases like, you know, red skies at night, sailors do not delight, red skies in the morning, sailors take warning. Are those things true mostly?
Actually, you do study the skies and the clouds, especially if you're sailing on the ocean, to look at the signs, because you, whatever the forecast was, it's not usually accurate exactly where you are. And so, you know, you can be in some particular position in the bay or on the coast or in the ocean, and you have to pay attention to what the clouds and what the water looks like.
And when you're out there, do you say, you know, port starboard, bow stern, or left, right, front, back?
Oh, definitely. You're going to use starboard and port and bow and stern, and you have specific directions because you don't have a lot of time when you're communicating, and you want to make sure not to use terms loosely. You have to know that if you say, please, you know, do this, that you're going to have the exact term that the person you're talking to, your mate, is going to know exactly what you want if you're at the helm or if you're taking instructions from the helm, so that you can act quickly and work together.
Yeah, it's like the term keel over. That happens with people, too. We don't want that to happen. Karen, thank you so much. Stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
We'll see you back again, 9:37 next week, Tuesday.
All right, I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back on Titillating Sports.